you very much.
Playing trumpets this early. Well, it's not really early in the morning, but my face is saying it's early in the morning. It's great to be with you. I am so thankful that Roger thought enough of me to ask me to play for such a prestigious group. This is a wonderful group. We hear all about Young at Heart at our church and what a great ministry it is, and you people are fabulous people. So it's really great for me to be with you today. We're going to play some music and have some fun. I thought about, well, what could a trumpet player bring to a group like this? Well, first of all, I can bring the love I have for the Lord, the love I have for music. I can bring to you the gift that God, I think, has given me, and that's enthusiasm. But what else can I bring? Well, the last few years, 3 years ago, I was asked to be a part of a group called Eurobrass. And Eurobrass is a collection of professional American and German brass players. And through the auspices of Greater Europe Mission, we gather together and learn a program and take it into the churches in Germany. And so I had the opportunity to play with them. It's a great ministry. Germany is a wonderful country full of lots of traditions, but unfortunately the church is really growing dead and cold there, and so they really are looking for some spark to bring the gospel back into the presentation there at their churches, and they love brass music. And so we were finding audiences, basically hundreds and thousands of people coming to our concerts, and when they would come, we play this great brass music, and then we give testimonies to the love we have for the Lord Jesus Christ. We give the gospel presentation, and really, we found over the last 3 years we've been really inspiring folks to both encourage them to increase their testimony and also confront those people who don't know Christ with the claims of the gospel. And so it was on this particular trip. 2 years ago, we were sitting in the concert, and I was wearing contacts at the time. And we went out for the opening number of the concert. It's a big number, lots of notes and all that sort of thing. And I was playing first trumpet in the ensemble. And I sit down, and we start the piece, and I suddenly realize that I had put my contacts in backwards. And I have mono vision. One eye is for long distance, and one eye is for up close. And I had them reversed. And so I'm sitting there, oh no, what's going to happen? I can't see the music. I get through this number. I said to the trumpet player next to me, I said, I put my contacts in wrong. She said, oh, shut up, you did not. And I said, yes, I did. So while they were talking between the first and second number, I went off backstage, got my contacts all fixed up, and I got back up on stage. And as I sat down, I knocked my chair off the back of the stage and fell with it and my trumpet off the back of the stage. The audience was horrified, trying to help me and all of that sort of thing. And I gathered my thoughts, and I got back up, and then we went on to the concert, and pretty soon one of the members of the group passed me a note. And on the note, it said, Charlie, things like this happen to you because you have the gift of storytelling. So what I'm going to do today is tell you stories, all right? Are you ready? I'm going to tell you stories, and many of them will not seem like they're true. I promise you, everything that I'm going to tell you today happened. It really happened, and it happened to this boy, right here. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce to you a friend of mine, a great colleague, a wonderful pianist. He has been at Cedarville University teaching piano, and sometimes in the early days theory a little bit, and humanities. He is a great scholar. I'd like you to greet once again my colleague, Dr. Charles Clevenger. One of my father's favorite numbers was this piece I'm going to play for you right now, Leroy Anderson's Trumpet Lullaby. pretty piece. It, trumpet players have heard that their whole lives. Leroy Anderson, we celebrated the 100th year of his birthday last year and played a lot of Leroy Anderson music with the orchestra downtown in Dayton. Well, as I said before, I had the opportunity to travel with Eurobrass, and on the first year I was traveling with them, we stayed mostly in homes, host homes. Sometimes the pastors took care of that and all that sort of thing. We came into this small German village, and in the middle of the German village was a very large church. We were going to do our concert there. And in that church was, connected to that church was the pastor's home. And his family, he and his family lived there. And also connected to the church was a very large, it must have been about 8 stories high, a very large bell tower. And it was for the entire village, not just for the church, but it chimed at times and all that sort of thing. Well, after the concert, we were told where our hosts were going to be, or where we were going to go for the evening. And I was given to the pastor and his wife, and to stay in their home, right next door. And I said, oh, that's really great. I don't have to go very far, and all that sort of thing. So the wife of the pastor takes me into the home and right next to the church, and she said, I'm carrying this big suitcase, and she said, follow me. She said it in German, so I assume she went that way, so I followed her. And so we go up one flight of steps, and I said, oh, I must be here. We go up another flight of steps, We're going up and up and up and up with my suitcase. I'm perspiring at this point, not knowing if I'm going to make it for the rest of the tour. So we finally get there, we walk into this attic type area, and then there's a door right there. And so she opens the door, and it's a very nice room. It's been renovated and redone, and she said, this will be your room for the evening. And I thought, that's fine. Well, it's kind of late at night, about 11:30 or so, and so I get my stuff ready and get ready to go to bed. And suddenly at 11:45, I heard a sound like I've never heard before. And it was bells tolling for 11:45. And literally the bells were next door to me, to my bedroom. They were next door, and they were these, I walked out there, and they were huge mechanical bells, as big as me. And they chimed, and then all of a sudden, when they were done at 11:45, I said, I got 15 minutes until midnight. Dear Lord, help me to go to sleep right now. Quickly. I tried, and all night, every 15 minutes, the bells went off. I feel them to this day. I can hear them inside my skin. They were going off so loud, and I would pray every time it would go off. I'd have 15 minutes to pray. Lord, let me go to sleep. Let me go to sleep right now. He knocked me out for about 15 minutes, and praise him, the bells would wake me up. And I'd sleep a little bit more for 15 minutes. The bells would wake me up after that all night. So I probably got a total of about an hour of sleep that evening. So I wake up. I get up in the morning. I get my stuff together and I walk down, and I must have looked terrible. I walk down to the bottom floor for breakfast, and the wife greets me, and in broken English she says, "We're used to it." She knew immediately what I had gone through, and the evening of the bell tower will never lose my memory. Well, with that in mind, we're going to play for you a little jazz piece right now. We've been doing this a couple of times at Cedarville. Chuck will assist. And this is a wonderful little piece by a French composer called Toute Suite. And it's just a little jazz waltz. We hope you enjoy this. Thank you. funny thing about the gift of music, you know. God gives us, I know that wasn't a sacred song, by the way. Didn't necessarily have a sacred text. But he gives us the gift, he gives us the beauty, he gives us the ability, regardless. I don't necessarily think there's any sacred or secular music. I think it's all music. And it came from the same source. It came from God. And so I just get such a kick out of being able to enjoy it while somebody else is enjoying it. And sometimes, I hate to say it this way, but sometimes I really don't care if anybody else does. It's really a kick to be able to play fun music and to play music that people have taken time to write. I'll never forget the first time I played in the Cincinnati Symphony. We're doing Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And I'm sitting there, and man, this music is unbelievable. It's great. I'm sitting there, I'm counting rests. 1, 2, 3, 4. 2, 2, 3, 4. You know, trumpet players in Beethoven symphonies, we rest for about 64 measures and come in and play. Bop, bop, bum. And then we rest for another 64 measures. But I'm sitting there, and I'm listening to this music, and I'm saying, man, God, you are so great. And I'm worshiping him to Beethoven's Fifth. And it's like being at church. So it's really, really cool. Sorry to, that wasn't on my list. Yes, I want to tell you a little bit about childhood life. Mom, my mother's in the audience, so I think she knows this one. I'm not really sure, but there may be some details that she might learn for the first time today in this story. Right after I got my driver's license, my dad was pretty good with me. Let me, you know, if I had responsibility, let me have the car a little bit. And I had a band practice in the stadium in our little town. It was clear out the other end of town. So he said, I'll let you have the car as long as you bring your sister home from band practice. So I heard that he said, I'll let you have the car. I didn't hear the part about sister. Funny thing about doing the Father's will, sometimes we sort of do it, you know. So anyway, he gave me the car, and I'm out to band practice. Band practice gets done, and I jump in the car, and I'm driving off. I take off, and I'm tooling in my dad's, what was it then? Was it a 63 Oldsmobile or 56 Oldsmobile, some kind of old, what is it? One of those Oldsmobiles. Man, and he had it waxed, he had it polished, he had it washed all up, and it was so cool, and I was so cool because I was driving. And so I'm driving, and I drive home, and I come in the house. He says, where's your sister? I said, I don't know. He said, okay, you take that car, he said to me, I'll never forget. He looked at me and said, you take that car, you drive around until you find your sister. Guess which part I heard?
Drive around.
Amen, brother. I heard the drive around. I said, I can do that, Dad. I can do that. So it wasn't more than probably 4 or 5 minutes. Suddenly out of nowhere, 5 of my friends showed up. Right there. Conveniently on the street. I said, get in. It's a 6-passenger car. I got 5 friends and me. So we're sitting in the car. Now we're driving around. My dad told me to. He said, drive around. I'm driving around town. We go out by the Dairy Queen. We go downtown. We're driving all over the place and having a great time. Suddenly, the guy in the middle next to me, my friend Jimmy Jewell was his name, he pressed the cigarette lighter. Well, none of my friends smoked. And we're all talking and hollering and all that kind of thing. We're driving around. Suddenly, he takes the cigarette lighter out and he lights. The enemy of any of you remember what an M80 is? M80? Yeah, it's a firecracker. It's about that big. It's got the wick in the middle. Nowadays, they call it a quarter stick of dynamite. Yeah, it's about that big. And he lights it in my dad's car while I'm driving. And I look at him and I'm screaming, what are you doing? And I'm driving, of course. And he just looks at me, smiles back, and nonchalantly throws it out the window, right past me. The window was up.
Oops.
The M80 landed in my lap. I look down, oh no, this firecracker. I throw it up in the air. All this happened, and it really happened, and it happened within about a 5-second time lapse. It hits the ceiling, it goes into the back. And now the 3 guys in the back are bouncing it back and forth. Finally, it gets bounced up onto the dashboard of the car. And all 6 pairs of eyes now go to that wick, and we all know inside our heart of hearts, it's going to blow. We know it's going to blow. At that point, I had gotten the car down sort of slow. All four doors come flying open. We exit the car. Just at that point, it blows. Kaboom. Like that. I am now laying on the ground, looking at my father's car, still moving, with smoke billowing out of all four doors, heading towards, this is the truth, heading towards one of the busiest intersections in our town, our little town. It is still moving. So I get up, I'm running, I'm a 16-year-old boy, chasing my dad's car with smoke coming out. I get the car just before it stops, just before it gets to the intersection. I jump in, I stop. I can't believe I got the car stopped. And then I looked up and I see my dad's windshield, which has now been completely blown to smithereens. On top of that, when this all happened, this is the truth. This is the truth. There's a policeman who was sitting in the shadows in his car, and he witnessed the whole thing. He thought he had just seen six kids get killed by an exploding car. He comes up, and so the next voice I hear is, "Son, what are you doing?" I look up, and I realize it's me and him, and all five of those kids are gone. They're totally gone. He said, "I want you to get every kid that was in that car, and I want you to be at the police station in 15 minutes. Everybody knew everybody in town. So I drove home, and I said, "Dad, we got a problem." Oh, really? So I took him out and showed him his car. Oh, dear. He didn't say anything. He just held his hand out, and I knew that was for my license. And so I gave him my license. He walked back in the house, and I said, "Dad, we gotta go to the police station. They want me up there." He said, "They don't want me up there. They want you up there." So I headed out, and I tried to gather all the guys, and I found every one of them except Jimmy Jewell. I don't know where he went. I didn't see him for weeks, I don't think. I think he went on vacation. And so I get up to the police station, and they made this, they went through all this sort of thing, it scared us. And little knows to me, I'm sure my dad, he never told me, but I think my dad called up and said, "Send a little fear into the life of my son." And they did. And that was my firecracker experience.
Did you ever find your sister?
I never found my sister. You remember that, Mom? So the song I'll do after that is George Gershwin's "Someone to Watch Over Me."
She's looking for your sister.
Childhood story, and my mom doesn't know this one. I'm almost certain she doesn't know this one, unless the neighbor called her. In the days of growing up in a small town, as a young boy, there was a tendency to be a bit ornery. We used to take great big yarn spools, notch them out, put a spike in the middle, wrap a piece of line around it, hold that spiked out yarn thing on the window when someone was inside reading on a nice evening, and you pull that cord and it goes brrrr, and you see them throw the book up in the air. It was really great fun. So we were doing things like that. And I and my friends, Donnie and Jimmy Rowland, we were so stupid, actually. We did the same things to the same people all the time. You know, as though they didn't know it was us again. And so every weekend, we went to this one home around Jimmy Rowland's house down the street. And we would do something to the front door. We'd rap on the front door and run around or do something like that. Or we'd throw something on the porch or rap on the windows. Or we'd do something. And so we had done this for about 3 weekends in a row. And finally, unbeknownst to us, the woman of the house decided to get out of her husband's blank gun revolver. And she knows what we do. We would go to the front porch and we'd throw something at her door or something like that, and then run around the same side of the house every time. And off to the back of the house and down the alley home, we're laughing. Look what we did, wasn't that really cool? And she knew that. So she decided one Friday night she's going to sit on the back porch and wait for us. So she hears a bunch of commotion out front. She knows what's going to happen. Here come these three kids running through her yard, just whooping it up like that. So she stands up and says, "Hey, you kids, blam, 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 blam." She starts shooting this gun. I thought I was dead. I thought I went right to the ground. I went to the ground and I crawled to the alley. This little kid, I'm crawling to the alley. I'm looking over and the other two guys, I said, "Are you okay? You okay? You okay?" And we get to the alley and there's stones in there, and we're right down the alley. These three little kids are going crawling like crazy. And I know the lady is sitting on the porch laughing, but I never went back to her house as long as I've lived. I never bothered her. You didn't know that one, did you? Scared me to death. Can you imagine that? I think I was in junior high. Mom, I might not have even been in junior high. We look up, hey kids, she's holding a gun. Oh no, it wasn't that bad. I didn't think I needed to be killed over this. Well, let me play another piece of music for you. This time I'd like to play a familiar chorus. It's simply called Above All. And it's entitled that because the chorus says that above all things, Christ thought of me when he went to the cross of Calvary. Above everything, he paid the ultimate price and went to the cross of Calvary for me. Above all.
Yeah, do it.
All right. I'll play one more quick piece. I probably shouldn't do it. Are we done with time?
Or can no, I do go it? Ahead.
All right. And one quick story.
I've had a chance to do several mission trips, and Tom Harris, you know the name Tom Harris? Some of you do. A missionary, he started a vision, organization called City Vision. He has a vision for cities. He's an evangelist. He was leading a trip that I was taking some Zebra students on in Greece. And we traveled by bus from Athens to Thessalonica, and Corinth, and all over. We were on the bus, and we stopped for a meal along the way. He was in the habit of keeping all the team money for hotels and meals and all that sort of thing. We had 25 college kids, and him and me and my wife, and so he had about $15,000 in American money on him in a little black pouch. So we stopped by this little restaurant along the side of the road, and he decides that he needs to go to the bathroom. So he goes to the bathroom, we get back on the bus, we go to this next concert, and it's supposed to be a big concert. They're going to televise it, the whole business. He's going to be interviewed, and he's a little nervous. And we pull up to the theater where we're going to do this, and we were sitting on the bus, and he said, "Charlie, where's my black pouch?" I said, "Where's your black pouch? I'm not in charge of the black pouch. You are in charge of the black pouch." He said, "I don't have it." He said, "Oh no, I left it at the roadside restaurant 100 miles from where we were. It had." I said, "Well, what was in it?" He said, $15,000. "Real money?" I said. He said, "Yes." It was for the entire rest of the trip, and that money was gone. So he gets on the phone, he calls, he says, "Start praying right now." So I start praying right now. He's on the phone, and he finds the name of this place, he gets the owner, he gets him on the phone, he said, "I think it's in the bathroom." The guy goes, he finds the black pouch. So he's on the phone, he finds the black pouch. It's still 100 miles from here. Well, we have to do a concert, and we have to do something in the morning. So he says, believe this or not, he says, "Okay, give it to a taxi cab driver and have him send it out here." I said, "What? You did what?" So we did the concert. The next day, we get up, we drive several miles. Out in the middle of nowhere, we meet this taxi cab. The taxi cab driver walks up, hands him the pouch, and every last dollar was in it. We left the trip. That was enough money to pay his entire salary in Greek money for the entire year that cab driver could have taken off. The Lord really, really blessed us. Isn't that amazing? It's amazing. So, yes. I'm going to close with wonderful words of life. This is an old hymn done in a way you've never heard it before.